Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high.
Welcome back to Wake Us Up, Children.
My name is Pod that I've heard of.
Today, we're going to be going over the very excited kind of first impressions of the new Guardians of the Galaxy. But first, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing great, TT. I am excited for these Guardians of the Galaxy. I have to say, these improvements are really impressive, and I'm really looking forward to talking about them.
All right, but before we get into that, obviously we have Sleeve It or Heave It. We're going to talk about a tactics card. We're going to say whether we sleeve it, we should play it more, you know, put it into our roster, or heave it. Nah, we don't really want to use that anymore. And one I thought would be fun to talk about is extreme conditioning, especially because we talked about climbing gear just last week.
Yeah, climbing gear, one of my favorite cards, and extreme conditioning is kind of a similar card. You can spend 2 power to turn one of your movement actions from being whatever size it normally is into a long movement. So if you're a short moving character, you get to go a big distance, and that can make a pretty big impact, especially if you also have a large base. Because once you're at the 50 millimeter medium base or bigger and you're moving long, you can get into the middle of the table with a single move.
Yeah, so I know way back, we set the Wayback Machine, you know, next time we do episode 200, we can talk about it. There was kind of a talk about, do you like climbing gear, do you like extreme conditioning? And obviously, the meta's kind of settled into climbing gear because it does give you that free action, and we've talked about how much we value free actions, but extreme conditioning is optimizing your move action, right? A long move is obviously the best move we can make here if we're going to be taking a move action. And I still really like the card. I used it a lot initially, and it's kind of fallen out of favor, but it's definitely a fun card, and there's a lot of times where, you know, that single long movement can be, like you said, huge, especially when you're talking about scenario play with larger bases.
Yeah, I think when you're comparing this card with climbing gear and then you're considering other move options, obviously a long move is great, right? It's approximately 7 inches plus your base size, whereas the short move is like 3 plus your base. But when you can do 2 short moves, that still gets you further, especially because you're counting your base twice. And so, for example, even a short moving character with climbing gear is going to move further than with extreme conditioning. Plus, climbing gear, you can move outside of activation, and you never have to invest in move action at all if you just want a little bit of extra movement. Whereas extreme conditioning, it's inside your activation, you have to be spending a move action to get any benefit. On the other hand, the big thing that extreme conditioning has going for it, which is very significant, is it only costs 2 power. And there are some characters who would really like to be moving further, especially on turn 1, and have 2 power to spend. So a great example of this is like Magneto. Right, who with his 50 millimeter base and his 2 power generation, thanks to his construct, he can get into the middle of the table with a single move, and extreme conditioning is a pretty spicy option on him.
Yeah, I think some of the other limitations, Pat, just to add them on there, not the dark pile on extreme conditioning. Obviously, if you don't have flight or wall crawl or anything like that, that long move can be kind of mitigated, right? The double shorts allows you a little bit more flexibility there. I guess one of the niche benefits of extreme conditioning are if for some reason you can only take one move action, extreme conditioning could be useful, depending on how that limitation's worded in there, right?
Sure, like if you're carrying the Senator? Alien Power Core.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Isn't the Senator single move action? I can't remember.
I think the Senator might make you move short, so that wouldn't work with extreme conditioning.
Yeah, it's too much to remember now. So is there anything else we need? Like, I think it's a good card. I think there are some characters that could really make it excel. And I think that's kind of where it lives for me. If I'm going to be taking this over climbing gear, it's probably because I plan on using it early and I have a particular plan in mind to utilize it.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to that power cost, like we said. I think good characters to use it. We already mentioned Magneto. Hulkbuster should be someone you consider, right? He has 2 power generation and a big base. And New Hulk, right, is also a character who might really enjoy extreme conditioning on round 1. It's probably also worth mentioning for any slow character when you combine it with another way to get them power. If you really want to accelerate them up the table and do something impactful, as my alarm goes off. Apologies. If you really want to accelerate them up the table and do something impactful, then you could always combo something like a leadership power or advanced R&D plus extreme conditioning.
All right, so it sounds like we're honestly, are we sleeving extreme conditioning? This sounds like one of the first cards that's kind of right on the cusp. I don't want to heave it. I don't really want to sleeve it, though. I kind of just want to like keep it in my binder.
I want to have it near your car.
Yeah, I want to look at it when I sit down at the game table. I'm like, I could take Extreme Conditioning, and then I flip to the other page and I probably don't take it. But I do want to at least think about it.
Yeah, I think basically the conversation to me is, I think generally speaking, Climbing Gear does this better most of the time. But there were specific times where this card is better, and it's worth remembering those times and having it sleeved and ready for when it is the right card to fit in your roster. And especially for those turn one plans, if your turn one plan involves getting a powerful character to the middle of the table, don't sleep on this card. It's a really good way of doing that.
All right, so...
So I'm sleeving it, but then I'm still not bringing onto the table that often. I do think it is worth having, though, and worth keeping in mind.
Okay, I'm going to binder it. I'm going to break the rules, because that's what happens when you when you create the segment. So let us know what you think about Extreme Conditioning. Patrons, let us know in Discord. Let us know the spicy rosters and tech you have with it. One of the characters that can honestly use Extreme Conditioning pretty well is Groot. And that's kind of a forced segue, but I'd love to talk about the recent Guardians of the Galaxy changes that Atomic Mass Games put out. Atomic Mass Games put out a transmission for the Guardians of the Galaxy update. They updated four characters, I believe, Pat. We have the Deadly Duo plus Gamora plus Star-Lord. And they're pretty exciting changes. This isn't going to be a full affiliation review. We do think that they're worthy of a full affiliation review. We want to hold on to that until we get some more games under our belt to kind of see what the community thinks. But we wanted to stay topical and kind of hit these real quick just so you kind of knew what was going on and some different ways to go. And I think starting with Mr. Peter Quill, Star-Lord himself, is a great place. So the big change is the winging it change, right, Pat?
Yeah. This is huge, right? It's a whole new leadership. Similar flavor, similar style, but complete change in functionality. And in the past, we have been very down on the Guardians leadership. We've said in various times that it's the worst leadership in the game, that it's kind of like playing unaffiliated, that it's rare that you get to use it in a game. Well, none of that anymore. This leadership is a complete overhaul. The way that it's changed, for those that don't remember, is you still have your three tokens, but now during the power phase, you simply pick up to three allied characters and give each of them one Winging It token. You can still spend the Winging It tokens in the same way. They let you reroll two dice on a single attack, defense, or dodge roll. But the wording has been tidied up as well. So it goes back to the original way that it used to be played, where you decide on the rerolls during the modified dice step. And then last but not least, just a cleanup thing, if you've got any Winging It tokens left at the end of the round, they go away. So you're taking your three tokens that come in the Star-Lord box set, you're handing them out to different characters, and they're all getting pretty significant reroll benefits.
Yeah, I think this is obviously incredible, right? I mean, yeah, super hot podcast take. Not costing a tactic card, getting it used for free, getting used every round is really amazing. Definitely helps with some dice fixing, which honestly, Guardians didn't have great dice fixing options outside of Winged.
No, not at all, really, aside from Nebula, right?
Right, it does dramatically change it, right? I saw a lot of people previously when you were using the Winged tokens, you were looking for a character that was going to be able to make multiple attacks, because they had to receive all three Winged tokens, right? Us being able to spread these across, obviously there's just so much value now, right? Drax, who I think is kind of a maligned, really good three-point character, is great at just moving and attacking, and this can support him and so many of the others.
Yeah, it really can. Now, yeah, so it's not pure upside compared to old Winging It. There's a couple of things that the old leadership let you do that this one doesn't. Firstly, with the old Winging It, you could get all the rerolls immediately and use them straight away, right? During a character's activation, you could decide this activation really matters. I'm going to get three sets of rerolls. Here we go. Whereas now you have to plan in advance. The character you give the token to might not get to use it. And along the same lines, you can't stack all of that power on a single character. You have to spread it out. But the flip side, you get to spread it out, right? So it's just a different functionality. In the past, you were giving tons of rerolls to one person. Now three people are getting is still a good amount of utility. And it compares really well to similar leaderships that give rerolls, right? I can think of like Cable's leadership, which is giving every character one reroll around. And Black Panther's leadership, which is potentially giving lots of rerolls in the same capacity, but at a cost. And probably on average, six rerolls with Guardians over a round is probably more than you're getting with Black Panther in most circumstances, although obviously, who knows. But overall, it seems good, right? Just it seems like a really high quality leadership that's going to be compelling on basically every character.
Yeah, I think you hit it. Just like, we don't need to go into it. Like, you're always going to have a case every round. We have a character that wants to reroll either attacking, defending, or dodge dice, right? Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is hopefully you put the reroll tokens, right, the winged tokens, on the correct characters, which is something you have to decide early. But again, the fact that you're going to be utilizing this every round as opposed to 1 to 2 rounds with the previous one, I just think this is a huge upgrade for them. I don't rank it as one of the top tier leaderships, but I think it's very good. I think you should be very happy to take this on the table. I just think it's a very nice quality of life change. And speaking of quality of life changes, Star-Lord also received Hit and Run, the popular two-cost superpower. This character makes an attack action followed by a move action. The superpower can only be used once per turn. What do we think about Hit and Run being added to Peter Quill?
I really like Hit and Run on Star-Lord because I think flavorfully it makes a lot of sense, right? For the guy with rocket boots who's always flying around to be more mobile. And on the table, I think it helps give him a different role to Rocket. One of the things I found is often he and Rocket were very static, right? And they would both sort of sit at range and shoot people. And now with Hit and Run, he is more differentiated as a more mobile attacker that can do a little bit more objective focused play while still dishing out damage, which is great because damage is really the only thing he does. So being able to do that consistently while still being relevant is helpful, right? And so Hit and Run is going to mean that he has to spend less of his time on move actions, can spend more of his time on attack actions. I just like it.
Yeah, again, I think it being a quality of life update for him is the nicest thing. It just makes it easier to use the character. It does open up some additional lines of play for him. I don't love the power gem on him still. You can Hit and Run round one now with it. It gives you another way to kind of dump power out, which you kind of struggled with before. But I just think it's nice. Like, he's bringing you Wing It. He's already had pretty decent attack types, pretty decent attacks. Like, Full Auto and Elemental Gun are fine attacks, right? Energy, 5 and 7 dice, respectively. I just think Hit and Run's a nice addition on there.
I think you're spot on. I do. One last thing I wanted to say is I think it's quite cute how his kit ties together on his own card, where you can have like a worst case activation for Star-Lord, even if he's way out of position, can be to like advance, Hit and Run, attack once, get 2 rerolls out of it and move again. And that kind of, as a bad activation for a character, that's actually pretty good. So I think he's going to be really fun to use on the table, and he's going to be really good in Guardians.
All right, so the next character up is one of the Daughters of Thanos. It's Gamora, and Gamora didn't receive a huge change, but I think it'll be a really interesting change on the tabletop, right? She went from 5 stamina on her healthy side to 6, and then 5 stamina on the injured side to 6 as well. She also picked up stealth, and I believe those are the only changes. Pat, did I miss anything?
No, that's it. So pure survivability changes, right? And this is a character who already hit incredibly hard, but was one of the most fragile characters in the game. Not even just at her threat level, but just in the game, right? More fragile than most 3s. And this brings her up to like being a fragile 4 rather than a fragile 3, which certainly helps. And when you combine it with martial prowess, she could be reasonably tough in the right situation.
Yeah, and here's what I'll tell people. If you haven't used Gamora, because Gamora kind of got a bad rep for being, maybe not a bad rep, maybe a justified rep. Gamora, I think a lot of people, I wouldn't be shocked if a lot of people never got her on the table.
Right.
Because there's a lot of kind of negativity swirling around her, and kind of understandably so. She hits like a ton of bricks. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been able to get her into the scrum and have her not explode, which I realize that's a big caveat, I understand. She really is a solid hitter, right? Just to recap, she's a 6 dice builder, right? Just a really solid 6 dice builder, power equal to damage done, and then like a damage trigger for bleed, right? Yeah, damage for bleed. She, again, right, Assassin's Leap to get her in there, which is the same as like Black Panther's thing. She's a really solid attacker, and we haven't even gotten to like Deadly's Woman or other things. I think stealth is great to help her deliver. I think the additional stamina is a nice quality of life. I need to get her on the tabletop. I think she's still fragile, to your point, Pat, but I do think these definitely help. Couldn't possibly make her worse. Definitely will only give her a whirl and see how it goes.
Yeah, I think extra stamina makes a bigger difference than you think in terms of survivability and power generation, right? And okay, it's a bit binary. Sometimes that point will matter, sometimes it won't, and she'll go down anyway. But I think over enough games, you'll definitely see the difference. And stealth is always nice, right? Can't complain about having that one. Situational, but useful. One thing that I've seen a little bit in people's reactions to the Gamora card coming out yesterday was people complaining that Cosmic Assassin, which is her spender, was still not very good. And to that I say, whoa. First up, remember that Godslayer, her strike, is better than a lot of spenders, right? A 6-dice attack with a condition that also has dice manipulation. So she doesn't necessarily need to have a spender that does a lot of damage. Cosmic Assassin is a really good utility option. It's a tool in her toolbox, right? Where you can be attacking multiple characters with a single action. And you can have circumstances where Gamora is able to take out multiple people because you can use Cosmic Assassin and Assassin Leap to spread out a lot more damage than you would expect.
Yeah, I've always thought Gamora's damage output was pretty impressive. And like I said, just her ability
this is perhaps going to... Yeah, it is. This is perhaps going to be like a broken record, but I have to say, I think Gamora is one of the Guardians who benefits most from the new leadership. And yes, everyone likes rerolls. Yes, you could reroll anything, but hear me out. Gamora's abilities particularly synergize with rolling hot dice, right? Her Godslayer attack gets big benefits for rolling wilds, and a 2-reroll option is one of the best options in the game for fishing for wild effects. So her Godslayer is going to be really strong. And Martial Prowess rewards you for completely blocking an attack and damages the opponent for doing that. So being able to reroll 2 defense dice once is often ways going to be better than if you had, for example, a single reroll every time, because you're actually going to get that trigger on Martial Prowess. So I think she has great synergy with Star-Lord.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here a little bit, Pat. Mm-hmm. I think Gamora is one of the characters that benefited from having 3 tokens.
Oh, that's true.
As far as
that's
Guardians
true.
Go, as one of the... But the fact that she's going to get more tokens over the course of the game, I do think it's a net positive for her.
Yeah, and I think you don't have to do an investment, right? So, like, it was so rare that you gave her any before, but now I could see, if you have Gamora on the table, I wouldn't be surprised if she got a token every single round.
Certainly yeah, maybe not round 1, especially with the addition of stealth, but I think every round you planted her being in the scrum for sure. And the other thing I want to shout out for Cosmic Assassin, I really like it, and it's important to remember it's range 3, mm-hmm. which is pretty big for a strike, and we'll get into that a little bit more with Groot here, but there's a lot of times where you're like, you've got to attack people within range 2 of the original target, but it's any distance from this character. So there's a lot of flexibility in who you can cosmically assassinate.
Yes, yeah, it's pretty strong. So let's talk about Groot, because this guy only got a couple of changes, but I think they're gonna add up to be a pretty big deal. And he was the only recipient of a nerf, TT. A nerf to our beloved Groot. Did he deserve it?
He did not deserve it. He is the best of us. But Living Plant, which is the 2-crossing superpower, remove 3 damage from this character, you can only use it once per turn. I have played Groot a lot. I stubbornly was convinced I was going to... I just really like him. I just like Groot. I think he's cool. He's a tree. He was fun to paint. I like him a lot. And I can't tell you the number of times he survived on 1 health, and then he double living plants, and my opponent was frustrated. I'm like, I don't know. He's not going to do anything else, but he healed for a lot. So I guess the beneficial change that he received is his strike was pushed out to range 3, which is huge for a number of reasons if you haven't played Groot. The main one being he's very slow. Without extreme conditioning, he just plods around. And he's very easy to control with any kind of push shenanigans or throwing him around. It's just I say quality of life a lot. It's just kind of a quality of life change. Gets him to make attacks more often. You shook your head, Pat, but you know it's a quality of life change.
It is a strong power level increase for Groot, doubling the range of his attack. Range 2 to range 3, of course, doubles the actual distance. It's a big deal. He also got one other minor tweak, which they didn't talk about in the article, so it's easy to miss, which is just, I am Groot. His spender went down from 6 power to 5 power. Which is nice. I'm Groot is a really good attack. It's phenomenally powerful. It can still throw people of any size. Still does a lot of dice of damage. So using it slightly more often is going to be good, especially if he can just throw out more builders over the course of a game. And he's going to be using Living Plant a little bit less. He's probably going to be using Iron Groot quite a lot more.
I think Iron Groot's one of the better spenders in the game. It just kind of gets missed because it's on Groot, right? An automatic stagger and a medium throw is just phenomenal. Yeah. And like just an automatic, he always throws and it's always stagger. Like there's no qualifiers. You don't have to roll anything. You don't have to do damage. He throws you and he staggers you.
Yeah, it's like a fair Hail to the King because it costs 5 power instead of 3.
Okay, well, now maybe it's not one of the better spenders. But I like Groot a lot. I'm excited for his changes. And his partner received some pretty big changes as well. Obviously, the little Rocket Raccoon. The biggest one being Nimble. This character does not suffer damage from collisions.
Yeah, and I like that they made this change because it was really sad that you didn't want to play Rocket with Groot because it was so easy to throw Groot into Rocket, and anyone that could always would because Rocket's chance of surviving Groot was so small with 2 dodge dice and 3 stamina. Even if he was on full health, he needed to like dodge 2 out of 2 in order to just live at all against Groot. So it was extremely likely that Groot's proximity was just Rocket's death sentence. And obviously you don't want that with this character pair. So I think it's great that they made this change. I am a little bit cautious because I think making Rocket immune to all collisions is really good. And when you combine that with the fact he's size 1, so it's easy to hide him, he always gets cover. Like, he could be a very difficult character to play against even without Groot.
Yeah, and the other, obviously, increase, which I think you'll hopefully see, I think we're going to see a lot more Guardians, let me be clear here. I know that they're fan favorites. I know Sooner played them in... God, what is that? TTS Season 2, a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away. But Personal Bodyguard went from range 1 to range 2. That's the ability for Rocket to push the attack to Groot. They extended that range, again, doubled it, which is just...
Tripled it. Range 1 is 1 inch. Range 2 is 3 inches.
Obviously, huge quality of life change there. listeners couldn't see my air quotes. It also, you combine that with Groot's strike being increased, it's way easier for Groot to be involved in the game at the same time Rocket's involved in the game. In the past, you ended up with this weird kind of alternating thing where, okay, Groot's going to hang back so Rocket can attack. Now they kind of close in. Groot gets to do stuff. Now, hopefully, on a bunch of like B scenarios especially, you're really going to be able to utilize both of them.
Yeah, and I really like the difference this creates, right? Because... when you measure out all those ranges, the range 2 from Rocket, Groot's base, and then the range 3 from Groot, like Groot can reach a long way out and still have Rocket be in bodyguard range. Any character that Rocket can attack with his range 5 gun, Groot can be attacking the same character with his range 3 strike and still be in range to bodyguard Rocket. So they're going to work really nicely together attacking the same things.
Yeah, I just think it's a really, again, I really like that. I think it's a really nice 5-point package you can stick out there in a wing. We combine that with some Wingnut tokens. Rocket obviously makes great use of them. Groot can. I'd almost want to use them more defensively for Groot, but you're never going to be upset about rerolling some dice. Yeah. And it really opens up a very powerful tactics card again for them, right? Deadly Duo is a phenomenal card.
It's great. Yeah, and Deadly Duo, I mean, is a reason to consider these two unaffiliated, right? Because they have such good synergy together, an incredible tactics card. Maybe if you've got five points to use and 2 unaffiliated slots available, you could consider just plugging them both into your team because they're such a cool little package.
Yeah, and Deadly Duo already had range 2, right, as the one of the restrictions in order to utilize the card. And I do also think it's worth mentioning We Are Groot is a really, really solid card as well if you're just looking for... a ubiquitous healing card, and you don't want to spend one of your banner restricted on it.
Yeah, and hey, it makes up for the loss of Living Plant, right? You can still get that double heal on Groot on the turn you need it.
I mean, We Are Groot's amazing, right? I mean, it's 3 power. I get it's 3 power, which is a lot of power. But Groot and allied characters within 4 of it move 2 damage. I get it. This works way better on paper and me saying it out loud than it does in the game. This could be a huge amount of healing if you ended up going super wide.
Yeah, it can. In the right circumstances, absolutely amazing. So, with Groot becoming just a little bit better, a little bit more efficient, I could see him being taken as his own unaffiliated option if you want access to that card. Maybe for the right team, it makes a lot of sense.
All right, so at a high level, that kind of covers all the changes for the recent Guardians of the Galaxy. You can find that on Atomic Mass Games' transmission site. Mark Garreau, the roster doctor, did a first impressions, which was also a really nice article written up on them. You can find that across thebifrost.com. I think Pat and I are both pretty high on the Guardians' changes. I think we're excited to get them on the table for sure. And we want to remind you, like, they have a really compelling roster now, right? I think all 4 of these characters are interesting choices. I mentioned Drax earlier. I think we both like Drax as a character, right, Pat?
Yeah, Drax is very underrated, right? He's a really tough three-threat character. He's got good damage, good control abilities.
Yeah, obviously. And then they have the five-point beater in Angela, which is obviously just kind of, right? She's incredible. Ronan, Nebula, who am I missing? I think that's everyone, right?
That is certainly a lot of characters. Everyone. And I guess honorable mention to the Power Gem, but we know that... at some point in the future, that's no longer going to take up a roster slot, but it might be an interesting inclusion in any case. So a really good chunk of characters, very diverse roster. I think if we perhaps talk a little bit about Dojo, right, maybe we can slide into some Guardians Dojo from here. They've got a couple of cool things going for them, right? As well as having this big list of affiliated characters, they have the cheapest affiliated core in the game with Nebula, Rocket, and Star-Lord. 7 threat for 3 affiliated characters, and then they can add Groot or Drax and have 10 threat for 4 affiliated characters. So that's like one more character than a lot of teams can muster and still be affiliated, right? A lot of teams are running 3 characters at 10 threat to be affiliated, and they're running 4. So they can do some interesting wide options, and they can also do some interesting options if you just want a home for some unaffiliated badass, right? You could run 2 incredible 5-point characters with that 7 threat core at 17 and use Star-Lord's leadership to power them up.
Yeah, I do think it'll be interesting to see them on the table. I think they're a great splash option too for any of your dual affiliation rosters. We talked about how we like Rocket and Groot as a little 5-point combination. Tossing Star-Lord in to get that three character affiliation obviously doesn't cost you that much more. It's interesting. I hadn't thought about what you said about using them as a super low threshold to add in some monstrous unaffiliateds there.
I think it could be good, right? Because of the way Star-Lord's leadership works now. Like, because the Guardians, you don't have to run them wide, right? In the past, that was their only selling point was, hey, you can have these two cost of affiliated characters. You can have a wide team. You can still do that, of course. But their leadership doesn't necessarily reward you for having 6, 7, 8 characters on the table, right? Because you're only putting it on 3. And yeah, as the game goes on, you're going to lose characters. And sometimes there'll be characters you don't want to give rewards to. But still, having more characters on the table is going to have diminishing returns to the leadership. But you can have specific characters that love rerolls that otherwise don't have access to such a bountiful supply. And you can have your plan B that, oh, you know, Nebula and Rocket can take care of themselves. Star-Lord can do his thing, and the important characters are the ones that are going to get the rerolls.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to play it. I hadn't really considered it, but I kind of like where you're going with that. Do you have 2 characters in mind or 1 in mind? I mean, Angela's a beast. We could obviously include her, but she's obviously affiliated already.
Yeah, and there's no downside with her being affiliated too, right? Because Lovable Misfits is a pretty strong card. I'd be happy to have everyone be affiliated to maximize that in the right circumstance. So I do think like Angela and Gamora, I think, are probably the best affiliated options. Maybe Ronan as well, but they are just really strong beaters with really powerful triggers on their attacks. Angela, having played a lot of Angela in Wakanda, it makes such a big difference having her attacks be a little bit more reliable. You can afford to fish for the hit on Blades of Ikar and not risk losing your whole activation. You actually have a shot of triggering her spender effect. And you're just much more reliably getting dazes and KOs to fuel Angelic Assassin. So I think you're right. Angela is a character with really good base rules and no rerolls. So giving her rerolls offensively or defensively is great. We already spoke about Gamora. Outside of affiliation, I'm going to just start us off with Thor. What do you think of Thor when he can reroll 2 dice on his for Asgard?
I mean, I've sent you multiple messages about how the bane of Thor missing his charge just like ruins games for me when I was playing Avengers. Yeah, yeah. I mean, getting him rerolls is huge. And, you know, if we're going to take Thor and Angel, like you said, that's, I think, a pretty solid 17. It also obviously is a great core to a dual affiliation roster there, too.
Yes. Speaking of which, Valkyrie is another character who has really good base abilities, no rerolls. She is just a good, efficient 3 who you'd love to have in a wide team, right? I think she would go really, really well with Guardians. You're going to have situations where you're doing Dragon Fang Warrior of Legend and you're going to be so happy you can reroll 2 of those dice.
I like that one. That's an interesting one. I'm going to toss out 2 or 3. What do you think of the Hulks?
I really like the Hulks with this leadership. Yeah, really, really, really. I think you're mostly re-rolling their builder, which is just lots of dice. But there's nothing wrong with that. And it just makes them even scarier.
Yeah, I could see any of the Hulks, or even honestly Hulkbuster, kind of being tossed in there. You're only at 13 threat at the low level, you know, which allows you to upgrade Nebula to, you know, an affiliated 3. Pick the one that you like.
Yeah. At 14. Yeah, or you could add a 2, right? And you could have your 15 threat Gamma team have, like, Hulk or Hulkbuster and still be 5 wide.
Yeah, which I, again, could be really, really interesting there, right? And then Nebula with the double rerolls obviously gets extremely potent there, right? Her damage becomes very reliable, extremely on the high side, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a bit of a luxury to give her the reroll, but if you just really want to guarantee that she activates first and murders someone, it's a great way to do it.
All right. Are there any other big kind of badass characters you think should explore this reroll option? I like Thor. I like that we're going back to some of the original ones here.
Yeah, I think Thor is a good example, and I like that he is like often with the Guardians in the MCU. I think it fits quite nicely. I think maybe we should just mention, I mean, there's so many good expensive characters, right? But a couple that synergize nicely. Ghost Rider has big attack pools and no dice manipulation like Thor. Okay, perhaps he's a little bit on the weaker side compared to Thor, but he's like, he likes having a wide team around him, right? His effects trigger when his enemies get attacked. And if he's surrounded by a bunch of Guardians, like, that could be a good place for him.
Yeah, okay. I like that.
And then I think it's also worth mentioning, and this is a sad little mention, but obviously characters that really, really care about specific effects on their attacks care more about this effect. Some of those characters are already really popular. That doesn't mean you shouldn't consider them. So a couple of popular options. Domino, like, extremely good with this effect, right? And good in a wide, aggressive Guardians gunline. And Medusa, everyone's favorite. Can't get enough of Medusa. Like, her builder is even more phenomenal when you massively increase your chances to get the flurry and the push.
Okay, all right, I can get behind that. It's, yeah, I mean, Scarlet Witch is the other one that pops into my mind. Right? I mean, she's already counting skulls, so really, yeah. Like, the amount of things we're rerolling is pretty low, but she's throwing enough dice that it just ends up being a very powerful attack there. But yeah. I think there's a lot of different ways we can go with it there, right? And I do like the idea of this more narrow core. So we're probably taking, what, 4 to 5 Guardians, it sounds like.
Yeah, why not? It's only 10 threats to take 4 of them.
Yeah, exactly. 2 of the bigger, you know, 2 focal points, right? 1 to 2 focal points. And then honestly, you could flex into another affiliation or just kind of fill out the existing one, right?
Yeah, so I think you can either have the option to go both wide or tall, right? So your 10 character roster could have a, like, 7 wide option or a double expensive character option. Or, as you said, you could throw in another affiliation, or you could do some combo of those things. Yeah, and there's a bunch of, like, this is going back to what I said before, right? Really, everyone loves this leadership, but there's a bunch of other synergies that just keep popping into my head. Another example, defensively, why not reroll defense dice on Iron Fist with heroes to hire, right? You're counting blanks. You can keep him alive longer. You can increase his chances of getting his throw trigger with his tactics card. There's all kinds of things you can do with this.
That's a good one. I mean, I really like it with Spider-Can, Amazing Spider-Man. I know he already gets to reroll all his dodge or defense dice, right? It's never bad to stack a reroll after that, right? I'm gonna roll my defense dice. I'm gonna reroll all of them. Then I'm gonna reroll 2 if I choose to. But he has a momentum trigger and a catch trigger on his 2 attacks, respectively. And he definitely doesn't mind hitting either of those.
Right, and he's a character that can just be a little bit short on power, and just getting him 2 rerolls on his builder could be all he needs to really take off in round 2 of the game.
All right. Now, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I'm still not super in love with the Guardians tactics cards. I do like We Are Group. I do like Deadly Duo. I don't love Crew of the Milano. But I do want to ask you, Pat, how do you feel about Lovable Misfits?
I think Lovable Misfits is really good. Now, it is hard to quantify, and it is not consistent. But I think its average effect is really strong. I personally take Lovable Misfits every time I play Guardians. which, let's be honest, is mostly for funsies, and it's a fun card. And also, if I'm being honest, it was previously the only reason to play Guardians because they didn't used to have a leadership. So, like, you might as well use their tactics card. But in using it, I've found it's been better than I expected.
Obviously, you've got
a sour look on your face, TT. So
I love it. It's one of those cards where I read them like, this card will be great, right? Yeah. Like, something will come up and it'll be useful. But then in playing it, it's like, okay, I just gained a bunch of power back, which I guess is fine. Now, I know it can be better than that. I still like the card. But the card, obviously, to me, incentivizes you taking a lot of Guardians, which definitely isn't a bad thing, as four of them just got buffed. How did you feel about just going super wide with Guardians still and running lovable Misfits out there?
Yeah, I think you can. I don't think you need to be super wide because I think what matters more with lovable Misfits is the proximity of your characters to the opponent. And the closer your characters are to the opponent, the more likely lovable Misfits is going to do something good for them. The more likely they can get the stun effect, the more likely their attacks are going to be in range. Whereas if you're using it, say, on Rocket, you're really, really hoping he gets the attack trigger, and otherwise, like, nothing, it doesn't really do anything for him. So I think I would take it. I think there's two things you need to consider. One is, how many close range Guardians am I using? If I'm running Groot and Gamora, hey, two characters, this has got improved, plus maybe Drax, Ronan, then I think this is going to be better. You might even find that Star-Lord can use it better with hit and run, although that seems like maybe a bit of a stretch, but maybe. And then the other thing is how many opposing characters are near them. So this is a card that gets better on those crises that bunch everyone up, right? It's a really good Gamma Wave card. It kind of sucks on Extremist consoles. Because once again, if you have all these little 1v1 fights with characters spread across the table, it's less likely that you're going to get the result you want on that particular place. But if your character's near a ton of opponents, it's much more likely you can leverage whatever result you get to do something useful.
That's fair. And maybe I need to run it out there again and be a little more focused on my crisis there. And with that in mind, are there any crises you think jump out that people should be exploring as they start their Guardians of the Galaxy rosters?
So the Guardians themselves are very focused on damage, right? And they don't have a lot of control. And I think this comes back from their seven threat core, right? Being Rocket, Star-Lord, and Nebula, which are three incredibly good damage-dealing characters with no other really effects aside from move around the table and kill you. So I think that defines them a little bit as being a very damage-focused team that can also be a wide team. Obviously, other characters in their roster kind of perpetuate this, like Gamora is mostly damage focused, Angela is mostly damage focused. It's only really Drax and maybe Ronan a little bit, but their control is really awful. So you're basically getting crisis advantage through numbers or through damage. And I think you need to consider that when you're considering your crisis options. Are you going to pick ones? Are you going to have a wide team and you're going to pick crises that reward that? So things like Spider Infected for an extract, or are you going to be a damage-focused attrition team? Because if you are, you probably want to slow the game down, and you probably want to be one of those teams that's picking demons downtown or slow extracts. What do you think about that?
I certainly don't mind them on demons downtown, right? The negative of the incinerate is a little bit less so, especially when we're talking about going so wide with so many different characters. You're able to push people off the points. And then generally in Guardians, right, and tell me if you agree with me, I'm going to make a lot of five dice attacks, right? So just the value of you losing that one defense dice just to me feels a little bit higher.
Yes, definitely. They also have a couple of cute ways of working around the incinerate. So Crew of the Milano, yeah. So it's an active card. It lets you remove special conditions and you can't suffer special conditions for the round. So you can do it on your first activation. When you're expecting other special conditions, I'm not advocating taking this purely to mitigate the downside of demons, but if you're expecting other special conditions, it has the side effect of removing your incinerates, which is fine. And cute way number two, which I think is a bit more practical, is you can have Rocket sit on the back, get incinerated, and still move all his attacks to Groot.
Yeah, that's a great shout out. And to be fair, like, while I've been critical of Crew of the Milano, it can situationally be a great card, right? If you're going up against Spider Foes and you think all webbed up is coming, obviously very powerful there. Yep. There's a lot of teams that are just kind of stacking crisis or status effects out there on you, and it can be very powerful to them. I just, when we expand to 10 roster slots or 17 tactics card slots, I think you should see it more often. And despite me kind of poking fun at it, I do think it's a fine card.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you that with the because it's kind of a specialist card, when you have those 10 slots, especially if you're running just the one affiliation, I would strongly consider it not as a card I'm going to take often, but for those specific matchups where you're on a crisis where it matters and you're expecting to fight characters where it matters, yeah, it would be a good one.
So is there anything else we want to cover at a high level with Guardians? I think we're both excited to get Guardians out there. I think we talked about how Guardians has this really nice, cute, small core, right? We can add some really unaffiliated beaters to them and get some a lot of meat, so to speak, on the table at low threat. And we're able to go super wide and keep the affiliation at high threat. We covered the different characters that wing tokens are going to go on. I mean, basically anyone that's starving for rerolls, which there's a lot of different characters out there. Is there anything else you think people should keep in mind as they kind of explore and are excited about new Guardians, Pat?
It is exciting, isn't it? I think there's a ton of different builds you can go here. And because of the leadership being so useful for so many characters, I think really you can just play almost anything you want. You probably are, though, going to be more focused on damage no matter what. And you're probably going to be taking characters that enhance that damage, at least to some extent. Just because it plays to your strengths, which I usually would rather do than try and mitigate the weakness. Like, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to take dedicated control pieces here, but maybe I'm wrong, and maybe people will find success with that as well.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how they go out. I've actually enjoyed Miles when I've played Guardians. I don't know if I want to call Miles a dedicated control piece. I think it'd be interesting to see Guardians and Spiders paired together, as I'm kind of dojoing it in my head. I wouldn't hate Ghost Spider either. I mean, that's 6, that's 13 threat, and you're still affiliated with... Yeah, I think I'd just rather play Web Warriors, though, the more I think about it. Yeah, anyway, I'm curious what people come up with, I guess, is the end of the thing. Like, my curiosity's been piqued. You know, I haven't obviously, you know, solved it. I don't think you have either. I don't think anyone has, despite what the internet may say. And I think it'll be fun to kind of get them out there on the table.
For sure.
All right, Pat, before I let you go, we've got to do the song bit. I'm excited about this one. I really hope you get it, because if you don't, I'm going to have a hard time finding another song by this artist. So are you ready, Pat?
So it's an obscure artist. Got it.
No, it's not obscure. It's maybe a one-hit wonder.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm going to start over because I didn't speak very well. I threw a wish in the well. Don't ask me, I'll never tell. I looked to you as it fell, and now you're in my way. I trade my soul for a wish, pennies and dimes for a kiss. I wasn't looking for this, but now you're in my way. Your stare was holding, ripped jeans, skin was showing. Hot night, wind was blowing. Where do you think you're going, baby? Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. But here's my number, so call me maybe. But it's hard to look right at you, baby. But here's my number, so call me, maybe. Pat, you know who sang that song?
Well, I know the song, and as soon as you started, this is one of those songs that, for whatever reason, it's just, you get stuck in your head, right? And as soon as you started saying it, I was like, yeah, I know this song. And now I just can't stop thinking about it. But I have no idea who sings it. Like you said, it's like a one-hit wonder, right? I remember the music video. I know what she looks like this girl with dark hair running around. Like, there's this guy and like her next door neighbor or something, and they're outside in the front porch. But what is her name?
Well, we'll have to find out next time when I find another song by this artist. I do know of like one more that involved Tom Hanks, so we'll go with that one. Pat and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. One of you, please chime in and give Pat some clues so we don't have to come up with another song for this one. You can let us know on Discord and Pat's, of course, on social media. We hope you enjoyed this small talk about Guardians. I know it wasn't as detailed as our normal affiliation overviews, but Pat and I thought it was topical to talk about this. We know a lot of people are excited about it. Again, you can check out Mark Garreau's work on it on AcrossTheBifrost.com. All of our work's on there as well. Patreon, stay tuned for the After the Credit Scenes. If you'd like to become a patron, you can check that out at patreon.com/AcrossTheBifrost. A couple bucks a month buys you a 15 to 20 minute bonus episode every week and helps keep the lights on for the podcast and the website. So I want to thank each and every one of you for listening, whether you're a patron or not. Till next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.